This is Engineering Nerds.
Season 2, Episode 8 of Engineering Heroes, a podcast presenting the incredible engineers that are shaping our society and battling our challenging issues. My name is Mel, and I'm joined every week by Dom, my co-host and our podcast resident innovative engineer, speaking to us from the trenches.
This week, we're speaking to a man who is currently calling himself the Chief Dogwalker. But we, and everyone else who knows him, know that he is so much more. And he's just taking a breather from the industry. He turned what some would call his weakness into his most solid strength and found his true calling in life. Our guest this week fell into HVAC&R, just like he fell into a few other things.
But during all that falling, he built a masterpiece.
He rose through the ranks to be the CEO of Aera, the peak body for air conditioning and refrigeration. But his personal struggles saw him morph into the position of government relations and technical services, a role that he called Chief Mischief Maker, a role he has very recently left. As he transitions into a new role that draws on his skills of advocacy and perhaps a little bit of that mischief making, our guest tonight is determined to change the world one refrigerator at a time. Our guest tonight is Phil Wilkinson.
Phil's engineering story began because he was good at maths, physics, and chemistry, really a traditional mixture that most engineers know. He grew up in an area where he was expected to go to university instead of doing something vocational. He had friends and family in the engineering industry. But straight engineering wasn't enough for Phil Wilkinson. Similar to a previous guest on our podcast, that is Rob Bell from Season 1, Episode 47, Phil decided to participate in a new course that offered engineering along with a modern language.
So I was like, Rather than just do, you know, straight engineering, why don't I just make it a little bit harder and do it with French as well? So, yeah, I lived in France for a year studying mechanical engineering. One of the things I do remember is being shell shocked going into my first lecture that was 4 hours long. So my lectures at university in Sheffield were about 40 minutes. Didn't understand a thing.
Do you speak French at all?
Well, I'd done it through school, but that's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like ABC, and then this was throwing you in at the deep end. Not only was it school French, plus the stuff you'd forgotten, plus the technical, because it's a really old discipline, so it's got completely different vocab, and the slang and the accents all thrown in together, and they speak really quickly. And the only way that I actually struggled through those, the first 3 months were the hardest 3 months of probably anything that I've ever done. But the one thing that got me through that was that on the whiteboard, things like torsion and stress and tension have all got the same Greek symbols. I've really valued the power of the visual language of communicating with engineering. Since then, because it kind of got me through a really tough time.
It just goes to show that true universal language is maths. It doesn't matter where you go, the formulas are the same and the outcomes are the same.
Definitely.
So you've done your degree. I can't believe you've gotten through the French side of things as well. Like that would be amazing. What was your first project that you worked on as an engineer?
Okay, so I actually had a summer job in a friend of my dad's fabrication factory. So that was like work experience. And that was a very, very deep learning experience in working out that I didn't want to work in a factory, burning myself with welding kit and setting myself on fire with grinding discs. I kind of worked out I actually wasn't a very good hands-on engineer. So
good to learn.
So that was my holiday job. So worked out I didn't want to, you know, I nearly lost a thumb as well when I put it in the wrong place.
No, you need to stay away from the factories.
Definitely. So it was probably a good idea that I didn't go into a more vocational type of engineering. When I came to Australia, I fell into the air conditioning refrigeration industry, which is just the story of everybody that's in it. So it seems to be this safe industry that is hidden that quiet achievers get into. But it was actually, I stayed with relatives on the Gold Coast, went door knocking with my resume And it was a guy from Leeds that actually took me on. And he's still to this day one of my absolute inspirations and role models, who's continues to do quite amazing global things. So first project I worked on that I remember would have been probably the Legends Hotel on the Gold Coast. And the reason I remember that, I was taken on as a design draftsman, and we did all the electrical and mechanical drawings. I found the mechanical drawings a lot more interesting because, you'd know, pipes and electrical symbols are pretty uninteresting. But I was always asking questions about what I was drawing. So the engineers would get the catalogues out and show me, and then take me to site meetings, and I'd get involved in meetings. And the job on Legends, I actually was sent out with a mate of my boss's to do the commissioning. So commissioning became part of my mantra from my boss's experience, which basically meant you should start designing with commissioning in mind from day one to make sure you get a good outcome. So I got to spend a couple of weeks staring up the shorts of a commissioning guy on a on a stepladder, and getting wobbly arms from trying to hold up a commissioning hood. So gave me great insight into making sure you designed good commissioning in from day one. So I kind of described myself as an accidental. I kind of accidentally done all this like crazy stuff because I never had a big plan to go to France or end up on the other side of the world or be a CEO in an industry that I'd never even heard of when I was in the north of England. So I've always just put my hand up going, oh, that sounds like it'll be all right, and learned a lot of things the hard way, including managing my own mental health, which has been a bit of a cycle through my journey. So yeah, I've never set out to do what I did. I just kept putting really one in front of another, and learned early on that you don't necessarily have to take the path that everyone else takes. And that was a great piece of advice from a lecturer when I went to see one of my mates in Sheffield, and just burst into tears in front of him.
Oh, no.
But it was brilliant. He just said, what's the matter? And I burst into tears, and I told him that I didn't know if I really wanted to be an engineer. And that everyone else at my degree was applying for all these great jobs in the UK. And he just said, look, if it's not the right path for you, it doesn't matter. And that's a really great piece of advice that's stuck with me ever since university.
Yeah, I think most of the people we've spoken to on the podcast, they seem to not to say they fell into where they are is probably not right, but it's almost as though the path just sort of presents itself along the way. So it's really the opportunities just kind of pop up, and it's just a case of whether or not you go, yeah, that looks interesting, I'll go down that path. And before you know it, you end up somewhere you never thought you would be in the first place. Your path is laid out in front of you without you even knowing when it's coming along.
I think I'd agree with that, and I think now that I'm at this stage where I've been reflecting back on my career as I go into a career change, it's very much, I think, what aligns with your values. So I think when you look back at that path, you go, oh, yeah, I can see now why I took that particular path through the journey.
So why are you still an engineer? Like, how do you recover from that?
Recover from which
being,
bit?
From being an engineer.
No, from, you know.
You never can't be an engineer.
Like, so I'm wondering, it's like, how do you turn around a thing like, why am I doing this? Like, in tears and everything. Why? What made you stay?
The people.
The engineers?
The people.
People.
So, and again, reflecting, and been doing quite a lot of thinking about this as I come to the changeover that I'll have just gone through when this goes to air. It's all about engineering, is all about people and about solving problems. And the bit I actually love is the people that I get to listen to and learn their stories. And that was the bit I always loved about the role, was the people, the clients, the client meetings, and the listening and the learning. When I got to that stage, it was a couple of, when I was in that piece at uni, was really a weight off my shoulders when the lecturer said this. France had opened my eyes up to traveling and a lot more than what the north of England had to offer. One of my great mates had just come back from Australia and had this absolute ball. So I kind of went, actually, I'm going to go to Australia, try and get some work experience.
So you got your degree and you thought, yeah, I'll just come to Australia and see what there was. And that's when that Leeds guy took you on.
Yeah, so pitched up at my relatives on the Gold Coast that I didn't really know. And they weren't there. They just left. I remember ringing them up and saying, oh, can I speak to my Uncle Jim? It was my cousin. And she goes, he's gone out to breakfast. And I was like, out for breakfast? Like, this is ringing from borders of Scotland at the time. I was like, who goes out for breakfast? So it was just, I mean, that was when the culture shock started, when that first phone call. But anyway, I wanted to stay for a couple of weeks with them and I landed. And they basically said, oh, we're not going to be there. We'll be back in the UK visiting relatives. There's a car for you to use. Please let the cleaner in. Let the pool cleaner in.
Oh, wow. Healthy.
And And I ended up staying with them for a year. So It was quite amazing.
So where are you working now?
So the role I've just finished at ERA, when this goes to air, is the Executive Manager of Government Relations and Technical Services. And what that, The board created that role for me when I stepped down with a lot of dignity, actually, from the CEO role, when I felt like at the time I felt like a complete failure. So they created this role that plays to my strengths of engagement with people, which is the government relations side, and also my ability to bring people together to look at problems and bring technical solutions to them. What I've come to realise over the years, the government relations bit is actually about just telling that story in a way that government can understand it as well. So it really played to a lot of my skills. Once I actually finally worked out what advocacy was, that it's actually just a really good story with evidence and an ask for change at the end. It's enabled me now to leave ERA with a great framework for a globally contextualized advocacy framework for Australia that ERA can play a really big role.
What would the world be like without refrigerators or air conditioners? As Phil transitions out of his role at ERA, he is moving into determining how the future of this whole industry could look like. He speaks about his Humans of HVAC-R. Now, for us non-engineering types, HVAC-R is an acronym for heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and refrigeration. You will be able to discover more about Phil and his journey into advocacy to save the environment on our website, www.engineeringheroes.com.au. There's even a link to Phil's Humans of HVAC-R on the show notes page for this episode if you'd like to know more about that movement. Now, I'll let you get back to Phil as he explains a little about the history of refrigeration and how when engineers solved one problem, they introduced something into society that is an even bigger problem to solve.
And even the refrigeration story is quite fascinating as well. It actually didn't start with the invention of mechanical refrigeration, which was in Geelong by a guy called James Harrison. Because when you go back through history, there used to be an ice trade, which was cutting out water. So it was a natural, low-impact way of preserving food. It was all about preserving food. And when you think about preserving food, it's all about the health of the people eating it. As engineers, we're always there solving problems. But what we also accidentally did, we had this really perverse outcome of enabling the global supply chain. So taking grapes from one continent, packaging them up, giving them to people in other continents that they might not eat, and then they're wasted. There's also really fascinating look from a social science point of view where through the use of residential air conditioning, what we've enabled is builders to build really crap houses. And they just, the air conditioner is like a band-aid, and it's never really sat well with me personally.
I think the good thing is that people are starting to realize that, and I know that through some of the documentaries and actually I think it was on 99% Invisible, there's a lot of people that are looking at the way buildings used to be before air conditioning systems and saying, why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we still doing that?
It's like what you said. It's like aircon was a band-aid and now they can make boxes that feel comfortable, but it's not good for the environment.
Right. Whereas they had systems that were natural systems that harnessed the environment.
Overhang verandas, big windows, airflow, positioning, all these sort of things.
And the bit when you start unpacking that a little bit more is not only have we not got the verandas for the shading, but we used to sit under the verandas and be connected to nature outside, which is really important for people's, again, your mental health. But you also used to see your neighbour next door, which was that physical connection with people, again, which is really important. So through the use of this wonderful technology that as engineers we invented, we've actually enabled a massive unpicking of social capital. So it's much more than an engineering problem that we've got now to solve, that we, you know, so we've helped create it. So now I'm saying let's work with social scientists, behavior experts, storytellers, as well as the engineers to get the planet back in a decent shape. This global challenge that we've got that I've talked about there, the emissions impact, this gang of humans that we're hanging out in the plant room with are looking at this global issue but want to take it down to a very single person, or, you know, the power of one person to change. We talk about changing the world one fridge at a time, about how can we take that behavioral science and turn that into a message to drive that minuscule change at every single person's level. And some of the thinking is actually, what would it look like if we didn't have fridges, but we had just-in-time health, which is, when you think about what refrigeration's for, it's for health and food preservation, and also the body, different aspects of the body need to be cooled at different times. And if you're older, you need different requirements. And what would that look like on an individual level, rather than trying to cool a whole building, which is just, it's senseless, really.
Yeah, well, I think Ashak talked a bit about that, moving into the personal comfort.
Yeah, so Ashak's doing a lot of work in thermal comfort. So yes. I'm talking, so thermal comfort is just about only one part of comfort. So when you start, again, when I've started doing some reading, you've got that concept of comfort, that what comfort used to mean, which was about feeling cozy and at home and cared for and loved. So the thermal comfort bit is just looking at the physiological side, which Ashak and his team are doing a great job with. But now starting to understand the social science and the health aspects, it comes right down to energy. How can we look after the energy in the body so that you're healthy? So it's that brainwave stuff for the mental health, your sort of your heart side, and also your gut as well. Well, some of the reading I've been doing lately saying they're all interlinked with neuropathways. So this just-in-time health concept is not just looking at temperature, but looking at your brain activity, as well as your nutrition aspects as well. So, or looking at spirit, heart, and mind is another way of thinking about it.
Well, everything you do in engineering always comes back to equilibrium. Like, it's always about states trying to get back to a, you know, a central plane, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether it is, you know, a human being or a room that you're trying to get to a certain temperature. If you've got everything, all the various components all working together and all sitting in a natural state, then everything just works.
Which is what humans are all about. My latest narrative is the party in the plant room with the basically disruptors that are going to tackle this number one action to reverse global warming, which we found out a bit late was refrigerant management. So there was a piece of work done by Paul Hawken called Project Drawdown vaguely heard of a couple of years ago. And then someone actually tagged me into a comment on LinkedIn saying, oh, yeah, this Phil Wilkinson's done leading work in refrigerants in Australia and Paul Hawken's coming. And I didn't even know the person who tagged me in, which was bizarre. So I kind of followed this, like this bread trail, and found out that, yeah, Paul Hawken had written this book and identified through quite an amazing process the top 100 actions to reverse global warming. And there it was, number one was refrigerant management. What we're doing is putting basically a fearless bunch of party animals in the plant room to create a movement, a global democratic movement to tackle this massive issue. And we're just about to start working with him again on his next project, which is called Project Regeneration, and how we tackle a climate crisis within one generation. That's really exciting, and that's what, as we go to air with this, that's what we'll be actively working on. So there's a gang of us called the Humans of HVAC and R 2.0. So it's very much focused around the service the industry provides people, not about ducts and pipework.
Well, definitely something to watch. I'll make sure that's included in the show notes.
Oh, tremendous. Thank you. So one of the great opportunities, having finished up at ERA, they've kind of I've been lucky enough to work on that as a pet project. Now it's freeing up some of my headspace and some of my energy to be able to work out how we can make that happen.
So are you?
So it's really about
trying to create new products like for refrigeration and all that stuff that aren't harmful for the environment. Is that what the goal is?
That's yeah. Look, absolutely. The goal is really to ensure we've got healthy, safe, and regenerative environments, and the role that our sector can play in achieving that in within a generation. So it's as much as people like to talk about the tech, it's actually more about the people.
Yeah.
So what do you see as the future? What is the future going to look like?
We've basically got this whole purpose about creating this healthy, safe, regenerative future. So we've got to align a global set of thinking with that. And if we think of fridge and refrigeration and air conditioning, that actually constrains a lot of thinking because...
You almost need to think of it as refrigeration as a service.
Well, you're exactly right. And that's what it is. But the refrigeration narrative and refrigerant narrative is actually owned by the companies that make a lot of money out of selling refrigeration equipment and refrigerant gas. People are always talking about different refrigerants. Refrigerants isn't the game. The game is get rid of the need in the first place as much for, like, do your passive house and then look at what the most efficient type of system is for moving heat around, because that's what our industry is about. It's about moving heat from one place to another. And it's done with using electrons from the energy sector.
What's the engineer's role in this?
The engineer's role, I think, is getting their nerd on. All that sci-fi stuff that inspired us as kids is really about helping free up their minds to, as I say, collaborate globally and really understand the social, technical, behavioural problems, get better at telling stories to each other and listen to the problems of society in context rather than just going, let's just make a refrigeration machine because it's better than trying to carve ice out of North America and ship it to Australia. Yeah. And then all this other stuff happened. So the role of engineers, I think, is to use their basic 101 problem solving, which is context first, recognizing that every situation is different. So your situation about your fridge is very contextual to you.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's why we talk about how do we get right down to that grassroots level.
I like what you were saying about the engineers' roles is to actually, they're going to have to think about these things and actually, you know, challenge.
Reimagine the future. Yeah,
yeah. Take a step back.
But by doing that, doing it collectively, we can actually accelerate to that purpose a lot quicker, I believe, and by doing it globally, collectively, and then right down to grassroots.
Yeah. So what would you say to engineers who are just starting out?
So young engineers really inspire me. And I think we probably had a bit of this when we were all that age. You were kind of fearless and you didn't have mortgages and all the rest of it. You're able to do this brilliant sort of wild thinking and problem solving, and that kind of gets knocked out of us as we get older and we become less risk averse.
Jaded, that's probably the
jaded. Yeah. I mean, look at you, man. Cheers.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm the poster boy for
that's it. Yeah. But what I would say, so what would I say to a young engineer was keep a young mindset. I'd suggest that they don't get a mentor, but they get a collaborator that's wise, that they can inspire and share their new thinking with that's just come out of leading edge research that they've had at school and help inspire the wiser engineers like you and me and grow together with everything that you bring. So the youth's got the energy, they've got this natural born way of collaborating, the next generation coming through is super ethical, and that's where I believe we as the humans of HVACR need to focus at that leading edge of new thinkers to start to drive that change. So it's not tapping into old buggers like me and you, unless they've got this young mindset, because they're the ones that are the hardest to change. Because one of the change management theory basically says everyone knows you need it, everyone wants to do it, but no one wants it to be them first.
Yeah.
So I think the youth are the real change agents. And
it's not until you're forced to question it that you actually take a step back and sort of think, well, surely there's a better way. We've been doing that for, years and years and years and years, because everyone's just going, well, that's the way we do it. When in reality, we should be looking at it and saying, well, is there a better way to do it? Why are we doing it
like
that?
Well, I think what Phil's saying is actually really important, not just for the younger engineers, but also for the older engineers. Because it's a lot of them will go, a young person will say, oh, why are you doing that way? And it's like, oh, it's because it's always the way we've been.
The way I do it.
Yeah, and full stop. So your advice to keep a young mindset is really pertinent.
Keep asking why, why?
It's not just the young person, it's the old person.
Everybody.
And so what's a piece of engineering that impresses you?
This is an easy one. So the fourth rail and road bridge in Edinburgh. And the thing I love about that is the beauty. Again, it's a context thing. I remember looking down the Firth of Forth on a misty morning with the sun rising. So you had this amazing backdrop to the two bridges. One's quite an old bridge, and then one was a big steel, I can't remember the name. I'm not a civil engineer, so... But it was just this old versus new across this beautiful setting, a stark piece of really solid engineering to do its job well and simply. And that, to me, simplicity in engineering is absolutely key. Like, don't overcomplicate things, which as engineers we do.
Mm.
We're just looking at it at the moment. It's a gorgeous bridge.
Yeah, it looks like a dinosaur.
Two arches and bridges. Yeah. And I think I've come to appreciate a whole lot more engineering when it's put in context of people.
Just to wrap up, is there an engineer, living or dead, that you admire?
So I was actually going to say James Harrison to this, who was the guy that invented mechanical refrigeration. But having just read the book Dark Emu about Aboriginal engineering, I haven't got a name, but Bruce Pascoe that tells the story he's a phenomenal storyteller about the engineering of the first people and how they used to adapt to climate. And you go, oh my God, why? Like, when did we stop learning to go back to the basics?
Yeah.
So Bruce Pascoe as a mouthpiece for the engineers of the first people, I think should be. I would recommend all engineers read Dark Emu. Go and learn from your indigenous people. So, yes, us from the Aboriginal, our first people. And again, context about the stories and what the basics were back in the day before our type of engineers came. They were the engineers of nature, basically.
Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great.
Thank you, because, as I say, it's a really transformational time for me, and very excited to be able to work on some of these passion pieces. I'm just looking for how I can give back to nature, for mental health and all the rest of it. So thank you very much for letting me share some of your time and for having me on.
Not a problem.
It's great. And thank you for tuning in to episode 8 of Engineering Heroes. If you want to know more about our podcast, your best port of call will always be our website. Visit www.engineeringheroes.com.au. Take some time while you're over there to check out everything else that's going on. Maybe sign up for our newsletter. Well, I hope you really enjoyed today's show. The best thing you can do to show your support for engineers is go and tell someone. Tell everyone you know about Engineering Heroes, the podcast. We look forward to you joining us next week when we bring you another interview with one of our engineering champions.